It's Erin,
Karen,
and Juliana, and this is Confessions of a Former Fangirl.
A podcast where two former fangirls try to turn a fake fan into a real one. Ayo, what's up?
Yo.
Hi guys. I feel like we needed a Megan Thee Stallion, you know, in there once in a while. Just a little, as a little treat. How we doing?
Good.
We're good.
Got my second dose of the vaccine yesterday.
Hell yes.
So I've been taking it easy today. Feeling good.
Good. As you should. I got mine on Monday.
Oh, yeah.
Or my first one on Monday, so.
Yes. And I got the J&J, which means we'll see if I survive.
No. No. Did you know, actually, I was reading a statistic, and the statistic was like, you're actually twice more likely to die from a lightning striking you down than you are to die from the J&J.
Yeah, it's like 6 and 7 million people who have gotten the vaccine.
I'm not actually worried about it. I think it's just funny.
No, I know. I just, you know, for the general public listening to this.
Yeah.
Yes.
We're not going to fearmonger about the vaccine on this podcast, all right?
No.
Get the vaccine.
No.
You will help save lives and protect other people by getting the vaccine, okay?
And that way you can smooch people safely. Anyways, so we can see where my priorities
are. Which is the moral of the story.
Do we want to tell our sweet, sweet listeners what this episode is? Because I think it's important.
Yeah.
To get it, like, to tell them.
I think so. I'm excited. Karen, do you want to say it?
Great. Sure. This is our first Taylor Swift episode.
Oh, yeah, baby.
TS part one.
Let's go.
Millennium approaches.
Oh my god.
And there's quite a lot to discuss and quite a lot of differing opinions about this whole
thing.
So I'm excited to get into it.
Yes. But before we get into it, we do have to go trot on over to Confession Corner.
We've trotted like horse girls into Confession
Click, clunk, click, clunk, click, clunk, click, clunk, click, clunk, click, clunk.
Yeah. I have one.
Okay, go for it.
I recently discovered this YouTuber. His name is Jack Edwards, and he's like a booktuber. Oh. So he does like book reviews and like book-related videos. And I found him because he does this series of like reviews of every book that a certain celebrity has like mentioned affected their career or like recommended. So he did one for Harry Styles that I watched, which was very good, and it made me want to read My Policeman. Mm. But then he also just did one like a few days ago for Taylor Swift. And so I was watching that before this Zoom, and it's fascinating, the books that she has chosen to recommend to people, one of them being The Hunger Games, which I just think is really funny.
She did write Safe and Sound.
Yeah. And then one of them being Conversations with Friends by Sally Rooney, which yeah. her longtime boyfriend Joe Alwyn is gonna star in the adaptation of.
Oh yeah.
So that's exciting. And I just finished reading Normal People by Sally Rooney, so it's all coming together.
Oh yeah.
That's series.
I really enjoy her work. So yeah, so that's my obsession of the week. I guess BookTube and specifically Jack Edwards.
Fun.
That's really exciting. I really want to get some new books this week, so I might have to check that out. And also, Normal People, the series, friggin' ouch.
I know. Well, Chef's I haven't kiss. Watched it because I wanted to read the book first, but now I'm going to watch it.
It's so good.
And I'll let you know.
It's so good.
Mm-hmm.
And one of my favorite scenes, it's like at the very beginning of the book and the story, and you've read the book and Juliana's seen the series, so this isn't a spoiler. Unless, oh my gosh, Madeline, is this, are you, am I going to spoil you? Okay, no. Okay.
Producer Laureate is shaking her head. She's okay. She's in the clear.
I had to read this book for, I had to read Normal People for a class. So I, like, got it on my iPad and I like was highlighting stuff on there, and I literally have this line highlighted, but oh my gosh, Madeline has seen and read multiple times, but just this is such a specific thing, but when it came up in the series, I was so happy when Connell like breaks up, or he doesn't ask Marianne to the dance, and his mom is so pissed at him, and she's like, you're a fucking disgrace. And I love that scene so much.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Yeah. There are, like, she will sometimes just write lines that, like, I think about for literally days on end.
Yeah.
Like, she's just such a specific writer.
She's got a new book coming out soon, I think.
I know. I'm very excited. So, anyway, that's mine.
I can go next.
You go, Rooney.
Okay. I was thinking about this, but I have two. One of them is not, I can't say it's like a current obsession, but something I'm planning to rewatch, and I think it deserves to be talked about more than it has been.
Okay.
But my first one is just these Japanese crackers that my boss introduced me to, that now my family is obsessed with, because then I introduced them to these. I don't know. They're just like these rice crackers, but they have this like sweet, like, not icing, but there's just like a sweetness on the top of them, and they're like so crunchy, and they're just so good, and so I can't stop eating them. So that's my real obsession. Mm-hmm. And then I just want to take a second to talk about this series called The Other Two that they just put it on HBO Max. And so I'm like, I need to rewatch it because it's so good, it's so funny, and I feel like not enough people have seen it. Because before this, it hasn't been on streaming services, but now they just put it on HBO Max, and I think they're also now in production of season two. But I was just reminded of how good it is because I was on TikTok and I saw TikTok. Somebody posted a clip of at the end of this one episode, one of the main characters. So the two main characters are these like millennials in New York, and their brother and sister, and their little brother who's 13 becomes like a viral internet singer sensation. It's like very similar to like the beginning of Justin Bieber's career is how they show it. So the other two is the brother and sister who are like just kind of now have to go along for the ride of their brother's like fame and success. But the older brother, I think he goes through a breakup or something in this one episode. And at the end of the episode, they recreate the credits of Call Me By Your Name. And so he, like, stares into a fireplace and cries. And it's so funny. And their mom is played by Molly Shannon. And in the background, the mom and his sister are like, the mom's like, what is he doing? And his sister's like, he's doing Call Me By Your Name. Like, just let it happen. And it's so funny.
That is so funny that you mentioned that, because I recently rewatched Call Me By Your Name, and when it got to the end scene, like, that is a beautiful, powerful, moving scene, but all I could think about was the other two, like, that bit, and I was like, oh no.
Yeah, the first time I saw it on the other two, I, like, lost my mind. I was like, I can't believe they're doing this.
It's such specific gay humor.
Yeah, it's so great. And Kate Berlant has this hilarious, amazing, like, guest starring role as, like, I think she's an agent or manager.
Yeah.
And it's so funny because they're like, oh, they find out that, like, that of the one the brother is gay of the pop star, so they're like, we're gonna make him a song that's about loving his gay brother, and like like they're like figuring out how to like his,
you need to calm down if you will.
Yeah, how to involve like this gay brother in the career. It's so funny. Wow. So I highly recommend that everyone watches it.
Wow.
Oh, and that's it.
Okay. That's amazing. I guess now it's time for my obsession. Listeners, you may remember from last week's episode that my obsession was reality TV. And I hate to tell you, but it's going to be reality TV again. But a more specific example, The Real Housewives of Beverly Hills trailer dropped. And bitch, it is so good. It's so good because I didn't realize this at the time, but the trailer starts with Dorit, who's like the most fashionista of all housewives everywhere. Like, and she also has like this kind of weird accent that you don't know where she's from because she's like so like well traveled. She's lived all over the world, right? So she's like, let's play a game of two truths and a lie. And you're like, and so then you see Erica, who's a really, really like the one that's having all the legal trouble with her husband. Mm. And she makes three statements over the course of the trailer. So they're like, I saw this analysis on TikTok and they were like, but that's not even my obsession. But my obsession is the whole trailer. But there's this one moment where this new housewife says to another one, you're so jealous of me. And the housewife B goes, fuck you, Crystal. And she's like this 50-year-old Southern white blonde lady. And she like stomps away from her. And she's like, jealous of what? Your stupid leather pants? And then it's like a shot of Crystal in like these really stylish leather pants. And she's just like smiling.
It's so funny.
And she's like, it's so, so funny. And there have just been videos on the internet of like, jealous of what? Your stupid leather pants? Like, she doesn't sound like that. That's just how she sounds in my brain. But that, I just have been thinking about that all week and it just made me smile so much.
Yeah, that so, trailer.
That's what I'm obsessed with. Really on the scent
to all of us. Oh. And I was like, I haven't watched a season of The Real Housewives since I was like 11 and I would watch Real Housewives of New Jersey with my mom. But that trailer convinced me to watch this season.
It's
like, I will be watching. I have no context. I have never seen an episode of Beverly Hills. So I have no context whatsoever, but I don't even care. I just want to see that moment with the leather pants.
I'll do a lot of like side coaching. And also there's this moment where one of their Lisa Rinna, who's a famous soap star, and
I'm also kind of obsessed with Lisa Rinna.
Lisa Rinna
is
her. Lisa
she's
Rinna.
Just iconic.
Is so good because she understands what she's doing, and she understands that basically the reality TV format, especially The Housewives, is just another soap opera. But she gets to play a different form of herself. But she's still, like, playing a character, if that makes sense. Like, there was one reunion where someone that she was fighting with returned her baby gift. And it was a bunny. And the housewife B goes, I'm going to give you back this bunny. And Lisa Rinna is looking at her. And she knows the camera's right on her. She's able to produce a single tear. And it's like, ugh, it's just... Say magnifique. Anyways, Lisa Rinna's
insane.
So funny. Lisa Rinna's daughter, who's 19 years of age, there's footage of her also in the trailer that's like, she's FaceTiming her daughter and her daughter's like, oh, I'm going to hang out with my friend Scott. Scott is Scott Disick, Kourtney Kardashian's ex-boyfriend, father of her, you guessed it, 3 children. He's 37 years old and he is now dating a 19-year-old.
Yeah, and like how old
we
is...
We know how I feel about
Mason.
This.
Mason
we
know is like 11, right?
Mason's... No. Yeah, Mason's 11. And so she's closer to Mason's age.
Only 8 years older than his oldest child.
Yeah.
Gross. Oh, well.
Crazy.
So,
anyway, I can't. I also want to see them discuss that.
Yeah. Yeah. I just. Anyways, those are the things I'm obsessed with this week.
Love.
Ongoing reality television obsession.
It's.
And oh my god,
we love it.
The Circle is back.
I know.
I think the first episode is up on Netflix already.
No, it's not. Really?
I think it came out today.
Vibes, that is totally beautiful. I loved it.
I did not finish the first season of The Circle. I have a hard time.
It's. Sometimes. I mean, it is so stupid. I think you have to watch it with other people.
Yeah. I have a hard time in general with reality TV shows that are just about people and there's no real... Like, I like reality TV shows that are, like, competition shows where they have a talent and they're all competing. I have a hard time with, like, a Housewives where it's just them as characters. Mm-hmm. I don't know why, but that's my truth.
Well, thank you for sharing.
Thank you. Thank you for allowing me the space to share. Mm-hmm.
That is a brave opinion.
It's not. Yeah. I think there's a level of investment you need to watch something like The Housewives, like, and I mean, not everybody needs it, but, like, I think it's hard to, like, just dive right in without knowing anything about it. You're like, why am I supposed to care about these people when all they do is yell at each other and, like, go shopping?
But the some of them, it's like, ugh. Like, Jersey's my favorite franchise, which is, like, not common, but it, like, I totally get where you're, like, head's at. Even though I, like, don't agree with it. Like, I just understand.
Yeah.
You know?
No, I completely get the appeal. I just think that, like, it's never really been for me. But maybe I'll watch this season of Housewives and I'll change my mind.
We'll see.
They suck you in. They really, really do suck
you in.
Because
I have a feeling that I'm going to be forced to watch this season anyway, so.
Forced or, like, gently guided? You know what I mean? Anyways.
I think it's time for us to get into the main topic of this lovely episode.
The meat and potatoes.
Miss Taylor Swift.
Oh, Miss Taylor. God, she confuses me so much. Let's get into it. Shall we start with the facts?
Yes.
Yeah.
Cool. So, I always think it's funny doing facts for people who are, like, just very well known like this, like, as if they're undiscovered. Yeah. But if you don't know, Miss Taylor Allison Swift is an American singer-songwriter and one of the best-selling music artists of all time.
Woo!
She has over 200 million record sales worldwide. She's got 11 Grammys, three of those being Album of the Year.
Crazy.
She has an Emmy, 28 Guinness World Records, 32 American Music Awards, 23 Billboard Music Awards. She's got 9 albums as of 2021, plus her re-release of Fearless. She was named Woman of the Decade by Billboard and Artist of the Decade by the American Music Awards. And she's generally known for her, like, narrative songwriting, her storytelling, and her, like, image rebranding, mainly her transition from, like, all-American country girl to pop star. The pop star we know and love today. So, them's the facts.
Whoa.
Yeah, she really, like, some of her accolades are really crazy.
Yeah, the fact she's 28 Guinness World Records is crazy. Yeah,
and she's, like, 31 years old and has done all of this over the past 15 years and has just remained so relevant for 15 years straight, which is crazy.
So my first question, I guess, is what was y'all's first exposure to Taylor Swift? Like, when did you first realize, like, who she was?
Good question. I think I do have an answer, which is that I kind of became aware of Taylor when Fearless was released, actually, back in 2008. Because in 2006, I think I was still a little too young to, like, be listening to her debut album. Like, I just didn't really know that it was a thing. But then, like, the Fearless era brought Love Story.
Yeah.
And it brought You Belong With Me, which, if you were raised as a girl in 2008, you knew those songs. Like, they were just inescapable. And so that's part of why the re-release is so nostalgic, because that was when I started to, like, become aware of her. And I would just, like, dance to her songs in my room and in my friends' rooms. And then I was kind of always aware of her after that.
Mm-hmm.
But I was never a big fan of her until recently, but we can get into that later.
And I feel like I had a similar introduction to Taylor. I was, like, in 2008, I was very obsessed with all the, like, Disney Channel stars of that era, like, Riley, Selena, Demi, the Jonas Brothers. And I think Taylor sort of got like lumped in with them a lot, especially because when she dated Joe Jonas. And I was like an avid collector of like Bop and Tiger Beat and Popstar and all those like teeny bopper magazines. And so Taylor Swift would be in those a lot as well. So I think that's sort of how I found out like who she was. And I remember knowing like Our Song, which is from her debut album, her self-titled album. But I don't know like how I found that song. Maybe on YouTube or something. I saw the music video.
Yeah.
And so I literally remember like asking my parents or like my mom to like drive me to Best Buy so I could buy the CD for Fearless when it came out. And before we started recording, I literally have it on my desk right here, like I'm in my childhood bedroom, and I got the CD, and I have it right here. And it literally still has.
That's so funny because classic 1989 is one of the only CDs really? I own.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
That's crazy.
Whoa. That is crazy.
Shout out to Taylor.
Oh my god.
Did you wait? It still has like the plastic.
A tiny bit
on
of plastic
it?
Right on the top right there. But yeah, I used to be obsessed with, like, owning physical CDs and, like, going through the packet, like, in the front and, like, reading the lyrics and the album notes and stuff. So this is, like, one of the first CDs I was like, I need to go purchase. Please, mom, bring me to Best Buy so I can buy this CD.
Yeah,
I was super obsessed with this album. I, like, listened to it all the time.
Fearless really was...
It really was
for a lot of girls of our age, I think.
It was just everywhere, which I think is so kind of crazy because as I was listening to both of you talk, it's like I kind of had a similar experience. Like, I wasn't as into Taylor Swift, but it was kind of like a night and day thing where it's like you don't even realize that this thing is happening, but all of a sudden it's like playing at your middle school dance and you know every single word. You know what I mean? Like, and you're like, I totally relate to getting my heart broken at 10. You know?
Yes. Yeah. We're like truly not even double digit age and we're like crying to these songs about heartbreak. So funny.
I think the thing that's so incredible about Miss Swift that I've noticed is the almost... She has this ability with her songwriting that I think is really incredible that does... at least from my experience, really invite people in and make it feel like she's lived your own experience. And I think the thing that's really, really interesting about her career is that she somehow managed to seem like the underdog as one of the arguably most successful pop musicians of our time. And people still are like, oh, she's just like me. You know what I mean?
Juliana, yeah. I have so many thoughts about that very thing. It's really crazy to me.
Well, can I ask what your thoughts are? To do that.
Yeah, well, I just think, so, I guess if we're going to get into it, the way that I feel about Taylor Swift is, like, I discovered, like, when Folklore came out, I kind of rediscovered Taylor Swift and became, like, a much bigger fan of her than I ever have been in the past. And I do agree with you that her music... she is, like, very emotionally vulnerable in a way that I don't think a lot of pop stars are, which I think is appealing to people. But I also think that, like, she knows that she has that underdog image, and she kind of, like, uses that to her advantage in, like, a very strategic business way, which at this point I think is why a lot of people think she comes off as not genuine, because it's like, Taylor, we see your very successful career. Like, you are obviously not, like, a plucky young girl trying to, like, make it in this big, big world. Like, you are one of the most successful people on Earth right now. So, like, it can't possibly be still that you are the underdog of the music industry. Yeah. You are the music industry. So, like, feeding us that narrative and, like, feeding us the, like, wronged woman narrative with the whole Kanye thing, like, I'm sick of that, too, because I think that, like, she keeps being, like, I'm trying to move on, I'm trying to, like, reclaim that, I'm trying to distance myself from that, but she keeps writing about it because she knows people love that story and, like, love to, like, get in on the gossip of it. So it does frustrate me sometimes when I see, like, businesswoman Taylor coming to the forefront as opposed to, like, the Taylor that is a brilliant songwriter and is honest. Because I think those, like, those are two very different people, and yeah.
Yeah.
That's what
yeah.
I think.
With the Kanye stuff, part of it is, I just want to say, like, it's not, also part of it is not, I mean, the whole thing is not her fault. Like, Kanye interrupted her, the whole thing happened, mm-hmm. and then it became such a huge narrative in her career, and then it was, like, finally starting to go away, and then the whole thing with that music video happened, and the phone call that they recorded, and all that shit, and her having to be like, I didn't approve any of this, and blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
And I feel like Taylor just handled that whole situation. I don't want to say that she handled it poorly, because it just sucks that it happened.
Yeah.
And also that situation was, like, a really horrible point in her career. Or, like, it was the whole, then the reputation era happened that didn't really reach the levels of success or acclaim that she had hoped. And it was just, like, that whole situation was a mess.
Yeah.
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 With the Kim and Kanye and that stuff. I don't really know what I'm trying to say here. I feel like the whole, it's like not her fault, but also, I don't know. I don't know how she could have handled it differently.
It's absolutely not her fault. And you're correct that she was not the villain in that situation. But I think that she perceived everyone telling her that she was a villain so much that she became paranoid about it in a way that was just very cringy to watch. The whole Reputation era, I actually maintain, I'm going to save this, I think, for Controversially Yet Brave, but the whole Reputation era was a swing and a miss in a big way. Mm. And it became a meme and yeah, I just think that she tries really hard. She's so hyper aware of her own image, and in some ways, too aware, because she, really plays into it in ways that are, nobody wants and nobody asks for, and, everybody's like, Taylor, we get it. We actually do get it, and we understand.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And we don't need to, dwell on this anymore, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. I think the three of us have talked about this, I don't think on the pod, but, when Miss Americana came out, we had this, sort of conversation about, Taylor's level of self-awareness and her, obsession with, curating her own image. And
her documentary is crazy.
I think, with the Reputation era, when she stays most true to, her deepest self, she is so much more successful than trying to, reclaim things and, make statements, with the Reputation era and, the whole thing with Kim and Kanye, and everyone was commenting snakes on Taylor's social media. So then she was like, I'm going to make my thing for Reputation snakes, and I'm going to wear snakes and wear snake rings and, have snake imagery. And it was just, it was just kind of cringy and, not the, I don't know, not the moment she thought it would be. Mm-hmm. And, things when trying to take a stand on, politically or on LGBT rights and coming out with you need to calm down and having all the drag queens and queer people in the music video, and it was just okay,
right?
Where it's there's other songs on and I think we've also talked about how always her lead singles are or maybe they've talked about this on Las Culturistas, but her lead singles are always kind of not as good as her other songs on her albums. I just think, sometimes she tries so hard to curate her image and create these eras instead of just, I don't know.
Yeah.
Taking it down a notch and just staying true to, her music, which is so good.
Yeah.
And the reason people fell in love with her was, her lyrics.
And she's such a good storyteller. That's why I think I love Folklore so much, is because she, took a step back. Took a step away from her autobiographical stuff and was like, I'm just going to use what I'm good at to tell these stories that are not necessarily mine, but that are going to resonate with people. And they did. And she was very successful, and that showed. And I also think that, I don't know, stop me if I'm talking too much about this, but it just, I am obsessed with the way that she knows herself and does not know herself.
It's so interesting.
She is such a, and I say this with so much love and no amount of judgment, but she is such a tryhard. Taylor really, and she knows that about herself, because there's a lyric in Mirrorball where she says, I've never been a natural. All I do is try, try, try. And that is, like, the thesis of Taylor Swift, is that she's just kind of this, like, weird, anxious girl who I don't think was ever meant to really be as famous as she is. And because she does have this huge platform now, it's, like, it can be kind of hard to watch her navigate it and figure out what to do with it, because she is so smart, but she, like, just doesn't. She's not a natural.
Yeah, but can I ask a question, though? Because I feel like Taylor Swift, I think something really important to note is that she kind of became this symbol for, like, girl boss white feminism. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
Oh, especially and so, in the 1989 era when she had the girl squad with all, like, the models and Carly Claus.
Right.
Bad Blood.
So do you think that it's more of emblematic of her career and, like, her awareness of herself is emblematic of the way that we treat white women specifically, and the fact that they are aware that they have to try hard, so they do try really hard, but and they know that they can't always necessarily rely on just their talent because they won't be taken as seriously for that, but they're not necessarily always as aware of the things that other communities that are disparaged or I'm not finding the right words here, but they're not, like, she's not as aware when the whole Kanye thing happened that the narrative was poor, docile little white girl gets harassed by a black man. She's not aware that when she puts out a song like You Need to Calm Down and the lyric is, oh, they're just throwing shade, that she's reducing homophobia to just, like, shade in the club. You know what I mean?
Yes.
And that you can just, like, you know, does that make sense what I'm asking?
That's kind of what I mean when I say that she's very self-aware.
Right.
But, like, she has too many people around her who say yes to her because she's completely unaware that You Need to Calm Down was as bad as it was. Or that, like, she's made a villain out of Kanye West, who is a black man, and she's a white woman. And, like, that's really hard to watch. And she is, in many ways, like, the face of, like, white feminism, like, her song "The Man" off of Lover, the album, is basically, she's just like, the lyrics are like, I'm so tired of running as fast as I can, wondering if I'd get there quicker if I was a man.
Right.
Which is like, sure, yes, I that's valid, but it's also like the most basic, simplified version of that issue. Because that's the only version of that issue that she experiences as a very successful white woman, you know?
Yeah,
So her, like, view is very limited.
I was reading her Wikipedia earlier, and I was just like, wow. I feel like there's this narrative, and I think I've watched interviews with her talking about the beginning of her career and trying to make it and moving to Nashville and talking about how she, like, banged down every door and got every producer, like, was like, please give me 5 minutes, listen to my demos. And she has this very, like plucky backstory about, like, being sort of a self-made. And, like, she did it all herself. She's written all of her own songs from the beginning. And, like, she had to make it herself. And, like, everybody told her no, but she was persistent, and then she made it. And, like, that is sort of true in a way. Like, I don't think if she didn't have any real talent, she wouldn't have made it. But obviously, like, she is an incredibly talented songwriter and storyteller. But, like, she had every privilege, like, set out for her to help her be able to make it. Like, her dad was, like, a broker for Merrill Lynch, I believe. Like, he worked for Merrill Lynch. And, like, so, you know, her came from sort of a privileged background, and her family could afford to take her on a trip to Nashville to start to get her name out there. They would take her to New York City so she could take singing and, like, dancing and acting lessons when she was a kid. And, like, then her family was able to move to Nashville so she could continue to pursue her career and, like, able to get her agents and managers, like, a manager, and help her help. She had all the support and all the privilege to be able to navigate becoming a singer, like becoming a musician, a professional musician at such a young age. And like, obviously she wasn't talented. Even with all that, it probably wouldn't have happened. But like, I don't know. It's crazy. Yeah. This sort of narrative that, I mean, and it also is sort of true when you boil it down to, she's just like a girl, a small town girl who made it big, you know? But like, she did have so much, but like,
definitely because of those reasons. Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's so
really
true.
Interesting. And I think
she's
maybe
never really acknowledged that.
She hasn't acknowledged that, but I think maybe there's part of her that knows that she's come from privilege, and she's so privileged to be able, sorry, I keep saying privilege over and over again,
That's what it is.
Get to where she is. But I think there's part of her that realizes that and is constantly trying to prove that, like, she deserves to have the success she has and to be where she is in her career for, like, that's multiple reasons.
Another part of it, too, is she's really, like, kind of paranoid that, well, specifically that she's going to lose Joe, who is her current partner, because she keeps writing about it. She keeps being like, I don't want the fame to push us away. Like, I don't want the way that people underestimate me to affect your opinion of me. And you can really tell in her writing that it's something that bothers her a lot. And she talked about it too in the Folklore Long Pond sessions with, this was actually a very funny moment with Aaron Dessner. They were talking about the song Peace specifically, and she was like, yeah, my inspiration for this, I'm paraphrasing, but she was like, my inspiration for this is like how fame has affected me and how it's affected my relationships. And it's just like really hard to navigate that. And he's like, totally. My inspiration is that I'm depressed. It's like, okay, great. Two different things happening here. But yeah, it's, she wears her heart on her sleeve, truly.
Right. And but the thing that I will say is that after, because I watched Miss Americana and then I watched the Folklore recording sessions, and you can see that there's like more of a calmness to her. And I just am like, I just wish you had more of that. And, you know, because I there's like a certain anxiety that I see in her that I totally understand. And
me too.
A total like, I need to, because I think I've personally always been this way. And I think that both everyone on this Zoom call can attest to that, where I've always been the type of person that's going to be like, I'm going to work so hard because I'm afraid that I don't like have the thing to actually back it up. So I'm just going to work harder than everyone else. And that's going to be like, and I think that's a very identifiable trait and a very identifiable fear. Right.
And she's like, she works so hard. Nobody can deny, I think, that she's very hard. And it pisses me off when people, like, I do think that, like, she gets away with a lot because she's a white woman, but I also think that, like, because of that, people feel more comfortable being misogynistic to her. Like, people will be, just completely discount her talent or discredit her as, like, a hard worker and as somebody who has, worked for the things that she's gotten at all. And that is just misogyny, and it bothers me.
And,
but yeah, I think those two things can exist at the same time. Where it's like, you are a very privileged white woman, but also, like, understandably, people have discredited you. Your entire career.
And she's so smart. Like, she's so, she's so specific in everything that she does. Obviously, she's so specific in, like, curating her own image. But, like, her fans know, like, she puts little Easter eggs in everything. She's constantly leaving little clues everywhere. Like, she just does stuff like that. And you're like, oh, like, it just adds an extra layer to everything that she does.
Well, it's a smart business move.
Yeah.
Because I was watching an interview with Kim Kardashian, which is complicated of me, I know. I think also we should do an episode on the Kardashians because I think it's very interesting and there's a lot to talk about there. But she was basically like, I realized that social media was a really great business tool because it gave, in customer stock in the product. If I showed them a product that I was working on and they got to choose the color that I did, or they got to choose the shape that I was interested in, and they felt like it was more personal. So I think that that's such a brilliant business move on Taylor's part, because it's like everything feels very personal when you, and like it's a thing that she put in there just for you, in the way that she's writing this song just for you.
Yeah.
Which is just so fucking smart, honestly.
Yeah. I mean, we can get into her fandom, but that's a whole, this, it's a whole other thing. It's
yeah. Like,
and her relationship to her fandom is crazy too.
Right.
The Swifties.
Yeah.
Well, speaking of being Swifties, Karen and Aaron, I don't know if you can, do you consider yourself a Swiftie, Aaron?
I wouldn't consider myself a Swiftie, but I do really love her. Like, I thing is, after Fearless, I didn't really stay as like into her music. Like, Speak Now and Red, I didn't really listen to either of those albums. I only really kept up with her singles, like, and songs that she made music videos for. Like, I love Back to December. I love that song. And, like, that was a really big song. And, like, Mine and, like, all the things that she had. And Mean, like, all the songs that were, like, her bigger singles I definitely, like, listened to, but not the whole albums. But then 1989... I love that album a lot. I was like, okay, I'm back in it.
1989 is my favorite album.
It's like every two albums until like Folklore and Evermore. Like, cause then I love 1989. Yeah. I own 1989 on iTunes. Like, I love that album. And then I like have not listened to Reputation. So I have not really listened to Lover either. But then I love Folklore and Evermore. So I guess maybe I'm a Swiftie, but I'm not like, but I'm not like a hardcore Swiftie. Like,
you're not a gold star Swiftie.
I also want to say that I'm not either. Like, I do like Taylor Swift and I am into her, but I'm not like, no, Juliana, I'm serious. You do not know how extensive Swifties get. Like, it is scary. Like, I'm able to think critically about her, which I think a lot of people are not. A lot of people will defend her through anything. And it's like, critical thinking out the window.
Yeah.
Well, it's fandoms.
Which is wild. But I will say, like, when Folklore dropped this summer, it was on my birthday. And it was my first pandemic birthday, and it was a really weird time. And I was feeling the need for some sort of, like escapism and catharsis at the same time, which Folklore happened to be for me. And so after I, like, became obsessed with Folklore, then I sort of went back and listened to her older music, and I'm a fan of some of it. All of it. I think a lot of Reputation misses the mark, as I said before. But
so now that we've brought up the fandom, the Swifties, as you may call them, as everyone calls them, I don't know why I just said that. Anyways, I just am curious to know more about it. Like, I know that my perception is that they're very dedicated and that they're very intense. And so I guess my question is, like, what do you think it is about her that creates that sort of dedication?
That's a good question. I think it has a lot to do with people feeling very seen by her music and, like, seen by her trajectory and her persona, I guess. Like I mentioned before, she's, like, kind of at her core just a very anxious woman who has never gotten over anything that has ever happened to her. And that's relatable, you know? Like, so I think, like, yeah, and people came to her at a very young age and sort of grew up with her. So I think a lot of it is, like, that she's been part of their childhood. To me, that is what
I think she's just, like, really relatable, and, like, she just writes music that anybody can, like, insert themselves into the narrative, and, like, I feel like sometimes she said things that, like, people don't want to say. Like, I think about You Belong With Me, and it's sort of such, like, a pick me girl kind of song. But also, like, and you're like, oh, no one wants to be that girl who's like, that girl's wrong for you. You should be with me. But also, like, everyone has felt that way. Like, everyone has felt that way at some point.
Yeah.
Also, that music video is...
iconic.
It's... I... Oh, cannot...
A lot of her early stuff that is, like, internalized misogyny is actually very good.
Yeah.
It kind of slaps. Like, Better Than Revenge, one of my favorite songs she's ever
done. Oh, my God, yeah.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God.
It
oh
is
God,
so
God.
Funny.
I also cannot explain the experience now of being able to get drunk and then scream these songs. Yes. Like, or, like, be in the... Like, I was driving home with my best friend, Amelia, shout out, and we were, like, scream singing You Belong With Me, and she was like, I watch all the behind the scenes stuff, like, and I was like, oh my God, yes, yes.
Yeah. It's like, I saw Lucas Castro, shout out Lucas Castro, on his story. He was like, the Fearless re-release is funny to me because Fearless, the original version, was one of the first albums that I really loved, and now I'm 23 and I know what weed is. I can just experience it in a completely different way.
Wow.
And I think that's really real.
I mean, part of the craziness about the re-release is that, like, I first listened to this album at 10 years old, and I listened to the song 15 as a 10-year-old and being like, wow,
oh my God.
I wonder what I'm going to be like when I'm 15. And now I'm about to be 23, and it's, like, crazy to listen to that song now and be like, oh my God.
Yeah, and to listen to her as a 31-year-old sing that song about being 15, it really does make me cry.
And her best friend, Abigail.
Yeah. Because she also... Do we want to talk about the re-releases now, or are we still on the fandom? Because I have thoughts about
I think I have a little more to say about the fans and her relationship with
All right, let's do that
fans.
First. Let's do that.
Well, what do you have to say,
I just think her relationship with her fans is, like, so unique and really special, and Taylor has, like, an investment in her fans that I haven't... that a lot of artists don't seem to have. And, like... You could say, like, I'm sure people say that she just does this to, like, make headlines or get attention or for people to think she's generous. But, like, I think she just genuinely loves her fans so much and appreciates them so much. And, like, she has formed this habit of, like, stalking her fans on the internet. And then, like she's done this thing for years where she sends select fans Christmas presents. She, like, hand wraps huge boxes and makes cookies, and, like, she, like, sends fans gifts. And she's also done things where she has had, like, secret sessions before album releases and invited a certain amount of fans to come to New York, LA, to her house in Rhode Island, to London.
Shout out, she has a house in Rhode Island.
And to just sit and hang out with her, and she feeds them and they listen to her new album. And, like, at concerts, she'll send her parents and her team out to go pick people out from the audience to bring backstage to meet her. Like, who, like, are wearing a homemade shirt or, like, a fun costume, or they're dressed up like her, or they have a sign or whatever it is, and to go talk to fans and then give them backstage passes. And, like, she just really adores her fans, and I think she appreciates the insane dedication some of them have for her.
She really does.
And, like, and she's not super active on social media.
She used to be, though.
She used to be. And she had a Tumblr that she still has, and she still uses it to make announcements. But that's sort of how this started, was she was, like, she would, like, stalk people on Tumblr.
Yeah.
And then she'd, like, find out their names and information and, like, send them presents. Which sounds crazy, but, like, that sounds so creepy. But can you imagine receiving, that's like, crazy. A homemade gift from Taylor Swift?
Just showing up at your house. That's insane.
She would sort of participate in the meme culture around herself, like,
via
Tumblr. Like, when the That's Becky meme happened,
oh my God.
She, like, got a shirt
she
that said, No, That's Becky.
Wait,
which I think is
wait. Can you explain the No, That's Becky meme?
It was this Tumblr post that was, like, it was, like, a black and white picture of Taylor Swift, very young Taylor Swift.
From, like, high school or something.
Yeah. And the caption was something like, this is, it was like a Keke Palmer thing where it's like, this is my cousin Becky who was like killed in some various horrible way. And somebody responded to it like, isn't that Taylor Swift? And then the original poster was like, no, that's Becky. And Taylor loved that. And she got a shirt that says, no, that's Becky. So
that is really funny. Like, wow.
It's really easy to be cynical of her, but I do agree with Erin that, like, her love of her fans seems very genuine. And if there's anyone who understands obsession, it's Miss Taylor Swift. So I can imagine that she relates to that level of dedication to someone.
Yeah. I also wonder if she's actually the type of person that was, like, not really should not have been famous, but should have been, like, someone that was on Tumblr and then just, like, wrote and sold songs. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. You mean, like, how Halsey started out?
Wait, what?
Oh, my God. Yeah.
Do you not know this? Okay. Halsey was a One Direction Tumblr fan. Like, she had a One Direction blog. She wrote this song, actually, when Harry and Taylor started dating, called the Haler song. That was basically about how Haler threw the fandom into a frenzy. And it blew up on Tumblr because people were like, your voice is so good, you should be a singer. And then she, like, got signed to a label and became...
That's, like, literally how her career started.
She was just a Larry shipper that, like, people happened to enjoy.
No!
Yeah.
Now she's, like, friends with those people. Can you imagine? That is insane!
Oh my gosh, what if Taylor sends her, a present for her baby?
Oh my God. Crazy. Oh my God. Now I send their babies presents. Anyway. Yeah.
Her fans are just super dedicated and just will, like, defend her to the ends of the earth.
Yeah.
To the point where it's like, send death threats to other people, anyone who wrongs her, sort of extreme. Oh.
Yeah.
Were there any, like, scandals within the fandom? Because I think, or, like, events within the fandom?
I mean, we could talk about the subsection of the fandom that is Gaylor Swift.
Yeah.
Which is basically her lesbian fans who think that she's gay. Which, I don't know how I feel about that, to be quite honest. Because I think the best evidence for Taylor Swift being a straight woman is you need to calm down. like, that is such a straight woman move. You can't tell me it's not. But at the same time, like, we've talked about this before with One Direction. Like, queer people finding, like, comfort in celebrities, I think, is a fine and good thing. So...
Mm-hmm.
If people want to believe that she's gay, I encourage that. There's no evidence to say that she necessarily isn't. I don't think she is.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm not going to say that you're wrong.
Mm-hmm.
Because people really believe that she dated Diana Agron.
And Karlie Kloss.
And Karlie Kloss. Yes. And then wasn't there rumors about Cara Delevingne as well?
Perhaps, I think so.
Maybe.
A little bit less for Cara Delevingne.
Because Cara Delevingne was like in the squad. Right, as well.
Mm-hmm.
There's so many people.
There's
on
a
the
lot
squad.
Of air quotes evidence for Diana Agron and Taylor Swift. That has a lot to do with her, like, songs that people think are about her. Because Diana really loves Alice in Wonderland. That's, like, her favorite story. And Taylor has a song called Wonderland that's essentially about, like, using Alice in Wonderland as a metaphor to be like, why didn't we work? So,
and is that, like, what people are like, as this is concrete evidence?
There's some other
not necessarily stuff concrete too. But, like, there's some other stuff as well. Like, it does go pretty deep. I don't have all of it at my fingertips, but if you just look up Swiftgron online, you'll find it, I'm sure.
Swiftgron? Oh my gosh,
that's the
and I've definitely seen compilations on YouTube of, like, titled, like, Taylor Swift being a straight, quote-unquote, woman for 6 minutes. And, like, it's just, like, Taylor talking about how beautiful women are and, like, stuff like that.
Yeah. Which is, like, Sure, mm-hmm. that could mean she's gay, or it could just mean that, like, she appreciates yeah. that women are beautiful.
There's also stuff because, like, sometimes she's changed know. Pronouns in songs to she.
In songs, yeah.
Instead of he, and people were like, oh, that must mean she's gay.
Yeah.
So stuff like that.
I'm just kind of, yeah, I'm kind of, I did, like, play into that a little bit, but then I was like,
whatever.
Know. Like, this kind of feels like I'm queerbaiting myself again.
So it's like, she seems so like, happy with Joe that I'm away. Like, let her be happy. Yeah. Finally. Like
a, right. Regardless mm-hmm. of what happened in the past, like, she's yeah. so in love with Joe, and it's, so that's good for her.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I feel like that's another thing within the fandom, though. It's like, for me, as a non-Swiftie, to... It feels like it's another level of Easter egg when you're listening to her songs or whenever she has a new album coming out, figuring out what and who these songs are about.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah.
But I don't know yes. how I feel about that, to be honest. Like, sometimes I'm like, oh, this is, like, cool that people can figure this out. But I'm also, I can't really put my finger on it. I think that it's, like, again, for me, it's, like, a... It's a weird line of, like, privacy versus, like, exploitation, and it's, like, yeah, good for her that she's able to write these songs about these people that may have fucked her over, but, like, I don't know. I just, sometimes I feel like when I listen to these songs, I'm, like, it might be a violation of privacy for the other person, you know mm-hmm. what I mean? I don't know if you guys have any specific feelings about that, but...
I mean, part of it, it's, like...
To that, I say, just don't fuck her over. I mean, I get what you're saying, mm-hmm. but I also think, like, it's well within her right to...
Mm-hmm. Totally.
But I think where it becomes muddy is, like, then her fans yeah. kind of attack that person. So it's, like, she is kind of mobilizing an entire fan base to be, like, fuck yeah. this guy.
Which, like, she knows. She knows that that's going to happen yeah. if... She's yeah. so close and dedicated to mm-hmm. her fan base. So that's where I think that that's, like, the thing of, like,
yeah.
fuck this guy. And, like, yes, totally, 100%.
She's very vindictive, that's true.
But also mm-hmm. it's, like, mm-hmm. it's not her fault that she's a celebrity and, like, the people in her circle are also celebrities. So, yeah. like, she's a public figure who dates public figures. So if she writes a song, people are going to be like, oh, we know that this is about this person because they've been publicly dating for, like, 6 months. So we know it's about this person.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I mean...
Mm-hmm.
And I do think she's getting better at admitting where she went wrong mm-hmm. in relationships.
Right.
Like, she has a song called Getaway Car that is essentially about how she cheated on Tom Hiddleston with Joe Alwyn. And it's very much like, well... I did that. Sorry. That was not your fault.
Oh, she did? So, like, I did not know that.
It goes both ways. Yeah. Yeah. She had a real messy phase for a second.
Well, but speaking of Tom Hiddleston, putting him in an I Heart T Swift sweatshirt or t-shirt walking through an airport while, like, wasn't her, like, album getting released?
When I think that happened? Was his yeah, decision.
I don't know that she told him to wear that. I think it was his reading decision.
I didn't know about yeah. the... her allegedly cheating on him. I was reading something earlier that was like she was worried that, like, he was maybe not dating her for the right reasons, and, like, it was sort of a weird publicity thing. They moved really fast. Like, they only dated for 3 months, and, like, they met each other's parents. Like, she went to London with him.
Yeah.
And it was very fast.
It was very fast, yes. Yeah, I don't know. I guess that's a complicated issue. Because it's also, like, she dated fucking John Mayer, whom I hate with my whole heart. And he was, like, 30 yeah. and she was 19. So, that's not good. But then she also, like, dated Connor Kennedy and Harry Styles when they were both, like, 18. And she was, like, 22 and 23. So... she's made some, I think, poor decisions.
And how much older than is Jake Gyllenhaal than her, too?
A lot. I don't know how much exactly. I think not as much older than her as John Mayer was.
There's just been some, like...
significantly older.
But, like, I can't imagine having trying to navigate the dating world as a huge celebrity. And, like, a young woman who, like...
Yeah.
anybody ever focuses on is who you're dating because she writes love songs and, like... then so everybody wants to know who they're about, and you're also, everybody knows who you are. Like, I can't imagine the pressure of that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I will say, the thing that is difficult is that when you're so famous at such a young age, you don't get the time to make the mistakes that you need to like learn the lessons that you need to become a functioning human. And so you're making these mistakes in front of large groups of people, millions. Mm-hmm. And then you're like, oh shit, I shouldn't have done that. And you have to face all these repercussions, which, like, if you make a mistake, you have to own up to that. But it's like, a lot of other people are making similar mistakes.
And they don't have to face the same level of scrutiny because they're not public figures.
Yeah, I agree. Being famous at such a young age must be so hard to navigate. She talks about this a little bit in Miss Americana, but she was kind of frozen at the age that she became famous.
Yes. Yes.
And it, like, stunted her growth a lot, and she's aware of that. But it must make adult life kind of harder to navigate on top of being one of the biggest stars in the mm-hmm. world. You're like, I don't really know how to be a human, but I have to be a human very publicly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So yeah, that's a complicated
thing.
I also think her being frozen at the age she became famous does contribute to her not being so aware of issues that maybe other people are aware of, like mm-hmm. the whole Kanye thing, and then you need to calm down. Like, she's just not even thinking about it.
Well, because I think that there's an inherent power dynamic, regardless of when she walks in a room, she's Taylor Swift walking into a room. So I think that, and I don't think that, like you said before, Karen, there's a lot of people around her, I think probably too many, that say yes to her all the time. And there's nobody that really is like, you need to think about this in this setting, or you need to think about this. You know, when you're in a career, you're not in a classroom. She's never had, like, I mean, she's had it from professional people, which is, like, one way to learn. But I think that there's, like, the reason you go to college, for example, is to, like, have those different perspectives, or, like, get some sort of higher education. And that's, like, also, like, a very privileged thing to do in and of itself. So I don't want to, like, say anything about that. But getting, like, an education at that age, I think it's, like, really important. And I think it's, like, one of the things that is missing from, like, people that get really famous at that age is, like, that kind of, like, time to mature in a mm-hmm. way that's, like, you're not facing the scrutiny of the real world yet.
Yeah. Well, because imagine if... Like, Taylor would be going to college around the Red mm-hmm. era, and, like, imagine. She could never. Like, she just could never. Mm. And, like, because think about how even Dylan and Cole Sprouse going to NYU, like, they got hounded mm-hmm. every day. So imagine if, like, whole-ass Taylor Swift was just walking around the NYU campus. Yeah, people would go crazy.
Yeah.
So I do feel for her in the fact that she didn't ever really get that experience.
Right.
Yeah.
Wow, I feel like we talk so much about Taylor Swift, and this is very exciting to me. I feel like I learned so much, and I can't wait for part two!
Where we part talk two, more. Baby.
Part two. We're going to be talking more about
Perestroika.
Her actual... You stole that joke from me, Karen.
You didn't say it, so someone had to.
In part two, we're going to be talking about her dating history, the re-release, the details, and maybe a little, like, a sprinkle of conspiracy theory, you know?
Yeah.
Just as a little treat.
And anything that wraps up
Yeah, anything else we forgot? But that wraps up the meat and potatoes. So now it's time for Controversially Up Brave. Music. All right, how are you feeling?
I do have one. I'm gonna like kind of be clumsy about getting through it because I don't really know the words, mm-hmm. but I could go if nobody else wants to go first.
I think I have one. It's stupid.
Okay.
Okay. I can go first. Controversially, I'm brave. People used to make fun of Taylor Swift's surprised face a lot because she would win awards mm-hmm. constantly and she would always be surprised. And this might be controversial, mm-hmm. but I really do think she was genuinely surprised every single time she won. I really do believe that. Because of how much we...
That is controversial.
Because of how much we've talked about, like, how anxious of a person she is and how hard she works mm-hmm. and, like, the inherent, like, need she seems to have to prove herself and how she mm-hmm. has this perception that everybody doubts her. So I really honestly do think she was... surprised all the time when she won even mm-hmm. though it was like it would be award season and she'd go to every single award show and she'd win all at every single one like in a row and she would still be surprised even though she had just won like the VMA and then it was like oh my god why are you so surprised mm-hmm. that you're winning the AMA or whatever but I honestly like do believe mm-hmm. that she was surprised mm-hmm. and I think they were genuine reactions. I don't think she would like pretend to be more humble than
I think she was at a young enough age that
and she kind of stopped doing the surprise face eventually like
people gave her so much shit for it that was probably more although I feel like she was really surprised when Folklore won album Folklore of the year
but I think it's because she didn't win any of the other awards that night so like to win the biggest one and only the biggest one probably was surprising
That's mine.
Yeah.
I have one. I have a controversial yet brave.
Yes, please go.
Controversial yet brave statement. Taylor Swift, fix your posture. I think that... she's a tall girl. She's a tall girl. I know. I'm going to come for her, but in not like a nice way. Because she's a tall girl. I'm also a tall girl. And you know what? We lessen ourselves when we shrink ourselves. Do not fucking lessen yourself when you're Taylor Swift. I think that my favorite part of the Folklore documentary when I watched it is I saw a hint of her being like, yeah, I know that this, like, I'm good at what I do. And I'm like, fucking finally. And I think that your feelings about yourself literally translate sometimes in the way you carry yourself and the way you operate spaces. And I just want her to stand up straight because I'm like, no, say it with your full chest that you're Taylor Swift. Like, own who you are and own what you do. That's my controversially upbrave.
I love it.
She's also, like, always, like, shrugging. No! She's a freaking glamazon! Come on!
Yeah, she's amazing.
I mean...
Yeah.
Think about, like... Remember when there was, like... rumors that she was like hiding in a suitcase when she was living in her like New York loft and like she was literally photographed every single time she left the apartment and one time it was like there was a big like car and like somebody came out with a suitcase but Taylor was nowhere to be seen and people were like Taylor is in that suitcase 100%
That's so stupid. I love that.
Honestly, I hope she was in that suitcase. Oh, I hope she crammed her tall body in that suitcase. The bed. Oh, amazing. Okay. This is my controversy at Brave.
Okay.
Part one. I think that if a little more thought had gone into it, or if Taylor Swift wasn't who she is, the Reputation era would have been her best era.
Oh.
And by that I mean, it is so close to being camp and, like, performance art, but the problem is she really believes it. Like, she really, really believes her wronged woman persona and, like, went into the Reputation era full force. No sense of irony at all. But, like, if you think about it, it's so funny.
Yeah.
The fact that she rebranded into this, like, dark, twisted fantasy, ooh, like, essentially emo phase at age like 25 or however old she was. Dark Betty. Exactly. Thank you, Madeline. It's like so, it is hilarious to me. And I think if someone who had a little more awareness of that kind of, like if, say, Lady Gaga had done that, mm-hmm. like it would have killed. It would have been so good because Lady Gaga knows how to perform fame in that way.
The fame.
As
fame
is
monster.
Often mentioned on... Yeah, exactly. And like Las Culturistas, they talk about this a lot, about how like every stage of her career is a performance of fame. And I think every stage of Taylor Swift's career is just her actually struggling through that phase of fame.
I kind of wish she treated it more like drag.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Like it kind of is drag. It's just that she doesn't know it.
Right.
Yeah.
And if she did something that like made herself a little bit more cartoonish and like made it a little bit more ridiculous, but still had like believed it, that's like what makes it. Right. That's what makes us love it, mm-hmm. you know?
It's too genuine for it to have actually succeeded.
Yeah.
And that's, I think, why it flopped. And also because, I guess, like, honestly, it probably would have flopped anyway because people just wanted to hate her at that time. But I, like, for her sake, I wish she had, like, gone in the caricature direction with mm-hmm. it. So, anyway, that's my controversy.
I think that's what she thought she was doing. She was like, everybody wants me to be a villain, so I'm gonna be the villain. And that could have been, like, a sort of amazing concept, actually. Like you were saying, like, if she went for it in, like, a campy way and, like, but I don't mm-hmm. know. But also, I don't know.
Well, because I think she felt, like, too much of a victim.
Yeah, it was, like, the height of her, like, victim complex. And so I think, I don't know. It's hard. But also, like, I think it could have been really moving. If you listen to some of the, like, Delicate is on that album, I believe. And, like, mm-hmm. and it's, like, that song's about Joe. And, like, what we should have talked about, her being, like, being afraid of losing him and being like, is it too soon to do this yet? Like, I'm in this really, like, vulnerable position and I think everybody hates me and I have this insane amount of fame that I don't know what to do with, but, like, I really like you and I think you like me and, like, I don't know. I think it could have, I don't know. Yeah. It could have been a bop, but it was a flop.
I also will say that I think that if she was going to go with that narrative, part of that relies on her being, like, actually a little bit scary. And I don't think that she's... you know what I mean? Like, in order for us to believe it, it has to be the kind of, like, look what you made me do, and I'm gonna, like, actually fuck you up. You know what I mean?
And she's, like, not good enough of a performer to really pull that off. Like, she... If you've ever seen her on stage, especially the Reputation Stadium Tour, like... She's given it her all, but it's so clear that she's uncomfortable.
Again, it's that, like, thing of her not being a natural. Like, I don't think she's a natural performer in terms of, like, pop star, pop diva princess, like, dancing and singing. Yeah. I think she is a great singer-songwriter performer, like, sitting down with her guitar or sitting down at the piano.
Yeah.
But, like, the whole pop diva thing is not her gig.
It's just not her. No. Which is funny, because I think she wrote one of my favorite pop albums of all time, which is 1989. But, yeah, I don't know. Her persona just doesn't really fit that super well.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so. We'll talk more about that in part two, I'm sure.
All right, friends, that's it for today's episode. Special thanks to our producer president, Madeline Parks, and our music producer, Chiara Negroni. Follow us on Instagram at @formerfangirlpod and on Twitter at @formerfan_pod. You can email us at formerfangirlpod@gmail.com.
You can find me, Erin, on Instagram and Twitter at Erin Browning with an extra G on the end.
You can find me, Dark Karen, on Insta and Twitter. @ K. Jessica Stewart.
And you can find me, regular Juliana, on any social media platform @ Juliana Mance. That is @ GIULIANAMANC. And you can find me on my website at www.julianamancini.com. That is www.GIULIANAMANCINI.com.
Bye, friends! friends.